The second annual Woodstock Comedy Festival runs September 19th through the 21st. Colin Quinn will headline this year's festival, performing at the Bearsville Theater in Woodstock on Saturday, September 20th. He's currently touring his new one-man show, Colin Quinn Unconstitutional, which had an off-Broadway sold-out run at the Cherry Lane Theater this past summer. It's always a great pleasure to welcome Colin Quinn to the roundtable. Colin, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me on.
Very nice. Always nice to have you on the program. How do you look at these dates when you do this type of thing versus the one-man show?
Well, this is a new one-man show, really. I mean, I call it a one-man show, really, because I'm just trying to not do too many comedy clubs, you know what I mean? Because I just feel like, you know, comedy clubs are great until the second show. I don't want to do, I'll do comedy clubs, I'll never do a second show again.
Meaning a 7 and a 10.
More 10, no more 9:30, no more Friday, 9:30, no. Because I can't take it. I don't think I'll speak for every comedian, even though I should only speak for myself. But I'll say, I don't think anyone comedian has ever walked off the stage after a second show, Friday or Saturday, and gone, that opened up a new creative path for me. That was really interesting what we got together. Because the audience is too important of a part of comedy for them to be drunken fools during my show.
Doesn't it mean, though, if there is going to be a 10 o'clock show, that often it's because the first one sold out and they're adding a second one?
Yes.
So they want to see you, but you don't necessarily want to see them in the condition they're in.
They want to see me. That doesn't mean I have to want to see them. It's like it's like just because a guy likes a girl doesn't mean she has to go out with him. I want to see the first show crowd. How about this? Have everyone hugging each other and double the chairs in the first show. If that's what you want to do. You want to sell drinks.
Was it different on Broadway when you were doing like a matinee and a nighttime show?
Yes, because the nighttime show was 8 o'clock. So I mean, it was much different. But even then, you know, you have to be careful. Like on Broadway these days, like my producer was like, "Hey, we'll be clever. It's Colin Quinn, party guy. Apparently, is my reputation, and for no reason whatsoever." And he goes, "We'll have Jello shots." So you have people at a Broadway theater walking up the aisles where Helen Hayes, named after Helen Hayes, where the great esteemable Helen Hayes performed, going to get Jello shots in the middle of my show. Walking in the middle, in and out the whole night.
I saw you at that theater performing Colin Quinn, Long Story Short. Was that a culmination for you? I mean, that sort of seemed what you had been working toward for a long time.
Yeah, that was the first. Now they're all culminations, really, because there's a last show, the Unconstitutional one, that's a more of a new one. That's less of a culmination. But this one I'm doing now is another culmination. It's about the one I'm doing in Woodstock. It's not unconstitutional, by the way. It's about me growing up in Brooklyn and a combination of that and ethnicity. So it's combining my childhood with ethnicity and, you know, racial stuff and mostly racial stuff, you know.
Should be
quite a surprise.
Is there a script for you? Is it written to the sense of this is how I want this to go? This story is going to have a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Is that how I do shows now, you mean?
Yeah.
Yes, and I don't have an ending for this, by the way.
Do you want one?
Yeah, no, like what you said, I want an end. I always believe, like, oh, the ending's going to come. Every night I'm like, I believe in my improvisational skills so much more than evidence. Like, when I write, it comes out great. When I say I'm going to think of it while I'm on stage, it goes terrible. It never works, but I still have total faith in it for some reason.
So it's different than, this is what works for you, in the sense of this style is better for you than the typical stand-up where you say, this is my act and I'm going to go do this and I've got to go out and do 90 minutes and that's what I'm going to go do.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, it is me basically saying this is my act and this is what I go do, but it does change every day. And it's also, you know, it's more like I said, it's changing the location more than changing the actual performing. Like, I'm still trying to write jokes. I'm still trying to be funny. I mean, obviously, I'm trying to say something, too. But, you know, but either way, like, I never want to do it at the expense of the laugh. But I still, you know, I just want to change the I just want people to have to listen and not be, like, at comedy clubs, they literally say to the crowd, keep your conversations to a minimum. And I'm always like, maybe we could even take it a step further and say, how about not having conversations during a performance? I know that's radical and crazy. But they do have to order drinks or they'll get thrown out. So people do have to talk. And even the seating, the way seats are set up, where people are facing each other instead of facing the stage, like that's a nonverbal message. A pretty, you don't have to be, you know, a semiotician to realize that that's giving you a nonverbal message saying, hey, talk to each other, and then once in a while pay attention to the guy on stage.
So when they're all facing you, as it will be at the Bearsville Theater, they'll all be facing you. They'll be watching the stage, and you'll be performing it, and that's what you like better.
Yeah, I like it better that way. I mean, that's why I came into comedy, so people would have to listen to me. I didn't come in so, you know, I could watch people. You know, yes, it's amusing sometimes when you see the most horrible behavior happening off stage, but it's not the show. It's just what's going on.
Have you noticed that level of behavior increasing in the sense that we've become worse as an audience?
No, I feel like the audience is actually better for the most part nowadays. I feel like they're raised up because comedy is such a prevalent thing now. I feel like everybody grew up on a Comedy Central and they understand it a little better. I feel like it was worse in the 80s and early 90s.
Because there was so much that it was, a buyer's market.
No, but it was also just people weren't used to it, so like a lot of fraudulent stuff was. Now I feel like people listen to comedy better. But I'm still, even though I'm saying just the opposite, I still don't trust drinking. The second show is just bad. You know what I mean?
That's just bad.
I'm in the same mindset with that Carrie Nation was in like 1906, like right before she picked up the hatchet.
Do you, when you go out and do a show like this, so this is a learning opportunity for you. I mean, this, as you say, you're looking for an ending. This is a way of working through the material to I assume, bringing it to another place for a longer run.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I want to, I've been working it out, like doing it, so it works as far as it's got all the laughs and it's got all the stuff in there. But it's, I want to make sure it has a bigger, you know, I mean, it's like deeper subject, obviously, when you talk about race in America and stuff, but I'm hoping for an ending, you know, that's not me saying, hey, you know what, we're all one race, the human race. Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know. I want it to just be funny and just kind of, you know, I'm just waiting for the big revelations my whole life. I keep saying if I write enough and work hard enough, there's going to be like this, you know, this moment, like, you know, Matrix moment. But so far it hasn't happened yet.
A Matrix moment in the sense that you understand the meaning of life. You understand why you're here. You understand.
Not just that I understand it, that I articulate it in one joke or one even routine. I'll give myself 3 minutes and say it on stage. And then everybody goes, you were right, you are a genius. And I go, thank you, that's all I wanted to hear. And then I leave.
And you feel like you've done your part.
Yes. I feel like I've gotten what I deserve, the credit I deserve.
Did you feel that way growing up in Brooklyn?
Yeah. Yeah. I always felt I was a very underrated person. But I also have a lot of delusions of grandeur, which I've started to realize from writing this show. Like, I mean, I tried out for the old Brooklyn basketball team in the 1970s, and I really was not that good. I didn't even start on the junior high school team. I was like sixth man, but again, I blamed that on just circumstances, you know, instead of realizing, you know, I was just good enough. But I just thought, I just always had a giant inflated sense of my own talent. So it's really kept me going all these years in comedy, don't worry.
When you go out, do you still have to worry? Are you at the point where you still have to worry about bombing? I mean, do you still worry about that?
I don't really. I mean, I worry. I mean, you know, of course it can happen. It happens all the time. You know, when you do these short sets, like we'll go to the Comedy Cellar and work out, I feel like if you don't bomb a little bit, you're not doing it correctly. That's, you know, my opinion. I'm sure people would disagree, but I believe it's like when you're working out new stuff, you got to go up. You can't. I'm not saying you have to bomb, but you can't always. If you go up and kill, the only guys that go up every night and just get giant laughs every night, we feel. And when I say we, I mean me and like two other people. I feel like it's very. Like I don't trust that because I'm like you. Nobody doesn't have to work. Nobody doesn't have to sweat in comedy. Everybody has to. That's the beauty of it. That's what makes it so just. It says nobody has to go up and try. You need the audience to work your stuff out. Nobody's ever written their whole act and go, I know this is going to work here and this is going to work there. the beauty of comedy is you go up and you go, I know this is going to work here. And then the reverse happens because the crowd's like, no, we just don't buy that for some reason. We don't know why either. And then you go, wow. And then you have to think until you come to another revelation, like, oh, that's what was not there, you know?
And the fact that that very thing could work on Wednesday night but not work on Friday night, I mean, that could make you go crazy if you let it.
Yeah, but then that's when you come up with the good excuses. Like, oh, those idiots. The guy before me was an idiot. He set them up. He made them put them in a stupid mood. And, you know, they were drunk. And then this idiot in the front, he set a weird tone. He yelled out at the beginning. And usually that's true. Usually what we're saying is not rationalizations. It's true, you know. But sometimes it's rationalizing. But, yeah, no, that's just the way it goes, you know. It's hard to put an excuse on it, but we always have three ready, you know. Yeah, they're not going to laugh at that 2 days after Joan Rivers passed away, you know.
Yeah. How did you take the passing of Joan Rivers?
I didn't know it well, so, I mean, I wasn't, like, crying or anything. But, I mean, I really loved what she did. I love the fact that she kept writing jokes to the end, you know. Like, when you see that, I saw that documentary of hers.
Yeah.
Where there's a whole cabinet full of jokes.
Right.
And I was like, wow. And then I really started to get into, like, because it is, we all are so lucky that we get to do this, that we get to actually give our opinions. If we can put them in joke form, we get to give our opinions on everything. It's amazing. So she's addicted to it to the day she dies, you know. That's why people are like, oh, she was such a worker. Because she loved it, because we love doing stand-up. It's fun, you know. That's why she was doing it. That's why she flies to Wyoming, because it's fun.
And you would want to do that at 81 years old.
Well, I say that now. It's easy to say now, but yeah, I don't know if I would. But what else am I going to do, you know?
When you started to write these shows and they became more structured and you added a director into the mix, did that help you?
It helped me. It definitely helped. And it also helped me be more, you know, you need a director or they won't do the shows off-Broadway. Like, they won't review them unless you have a director.
Right.
So my first director, Jerry, Big Jer, I said,
Jerry Seinfeld. Yes.
I said, you know, I need a director. Will you do it? And he goes, yeah. And he actually had fun doing it, you know.
It's someone else to help work you through the process, right?
Yes.
And ultimately, in that case, somebody who truly understands what you're going through up there.
Right, right. They feel it too. They're like, you know. And it's also somebody like you said, it's a pre-audience. I mean, I also tape everything I say and then listen to it later, you know. Like, I feel like that's the part of comedy comedians fear the most. We don't fear a bombing or a live crowd. We fear listening to our own voice and hearing how mediocre we are when you know what I mean? Because it's just like, you're like, oh no, oh, I can't believe I'm so cloying with the crowd. Oh, look, I can't believe I'm this, you know, all that stuff. So then you have to listen. But when I listen to that, that helps too. That's like it's like another director. Like, the more you can get feedback before you go in front of a crowd, the better it is too. And then when you go in front of a crowd, that's the ultimate relationship for a comedian. That's a relationship you can't get away from. You know what I mean? That's why I want them to be, you know, on my turn. It's like anybody else. It's like I'm realizing as we're talking, I don't feel guilty about those late shows. This is like Match.com. Want, prefer, non-drinker, non-heckler. Prefer early, people that like to go to early show and get to bed at a reasonable hour.
You're just setting the terms. That's all you're doing.
Yeah, that's
sure.
Exactly what I'm going to do.
And with the, when you listen back to a recording and you say, okay, I'm cloying there, does that then change that night, or do you find yourself doing the exact same thing?
No, it changes. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, okay.
It shames you right out of that behavior. That's why taping is so good. But you also get a lot of new material that way, too, you know?
Absolutely.
But you learn to be disgusted with your horrible attitudes, you know?
Well, Colin Quinn will be headlining the second annual Woodstock Comedy Festival at the Bearsville Theater Saturday night, September 20th, one show only. It is woodstockcomedyfestival.org for more information. Colin Quinn, always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks,
thank you very
Sammy.
Much. Thanks. Thank you. Again, you can find out more information about Colin Quinn being at the Woodstock Comedy Festival Saturday, September 20th by going to woodstockcomedyfestival.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.